My name is Michael G. Haskins. WBAI is listener-supported, commercial-free, resistance radio, challenging norms and defying them. Let's break down what that means. It means that no clandestine corporate entity tells me how to do my show. You better believe that. It means that you, the listener, and the diverse WBAI community have a voice which reverberates across the tri-state area. You drive this station, so fuel us. Donate by visiting give2wbai.org or pledge right now from your smartphone by texting the letters WBAI to 41444. And thank you for your support.
This is Kevin O'Donohue, licensed New York State mental health counselor.
And this is Nasima Diane Deemer, trauma-informed bodywork therapist. And this is The Positive Mind.
Bringing you some ideas, concepts, and guests to try and help you lead a more positively minded life. And welcome back from the fun drive. Thank you all for your contributions to this station during our February fun drive. We're very grateful for your contribution, and we're going to offer something today also on our show. Even though it is over our fun drive, we are talking with our guest today, Laura Munson, who is offering a book and will be appearing tonight on Wednesday, March 4th from 6 o'clock to 7:30, where she'll be talking about her book, Willa's Grove, W-I-L-L-A-apostrophe-S. Grove, and it is subtitled Four Women, 1 Week, and One Question. And we'll be offering that today for a contribution to the station. You can call us at 212-757-5555. Laura is a New York Times bestselling author and arrived on the scene mostly with her breakthrough memoir, This Is Not the Story You Think It Is, A Season of Unlikely Happiness. I'm going to ask her to explain that title before we go into this new book and this breakthrough that Laura had. So, Laura Munson, welcome to The Positive Mind, WBAI.
Thank you, Kevin and Asima. I'm very happy to be here.
So, I do want to talk a little bit about that title, This Is Not the Story You Think It Is, A Season of Unlikely Happiness. What was unlikely about it?
Well, nobody wants to hear these words. I don't love you anymore. I'm not sure I ever did. I'm leaving.
Oh, my.
Nobody signs up for a marriage or any relationship to hear those words. I used that time in my life to practice what I had been practicing for years as an artist, which means you are met with rejection a lot and other rejection in my life. And I'd been working with the idea of tuning into the mind and how our thought patterns both serve us and sabotage us. And so I applied it to a marital crisis and dedicated myself to a time of non-suffering during a time when most people would say I was a victim. Mm. And, you know, sometimes I was good at it and sometimes I wasn't, but it was done in a very mundane way right there at my kitchen sink, driving my kids around. I live in Montana. And just tuning in to those thought patterns. And I would say that that was one of the most powerful times of my life.
I'm so glad to have you here. I really believe in the power of writing. You know, I often try to get my clients to write down what your problem is. Let's just write it down. Write it down. You talked to us earlier before the show about a writing prompt. I want to go right to it because I want to invite our audience to participate in this, to really get the experience of what it's like to write out a problem on a piece of paper and how that can be helpful, because I do believe writing can be a positive activity and can yield a lot of positive results. So can you tell us this writing prompt that we talked about?
Sure. Well, during that time in my life, I wrote my way through this marital crisis, and the book became a best-selling book. The short version of it went viral in the Modern Love column in the New York Times, and that's how I got my start. Out of that grew Haven Writing Retreats, which is what I lead out in Montana. So I've worked with 1,000 people now. And out of that grew some prompts that I'd like to do with people who don't come on my 5-day retreat, people I can't dig in with deeply and intimately. And this is one that has helped a lot of people. So you ready?
Hold it. You need to tell them, get a piece of paper. Or are you going to go right to the prompt, or are you going to get in the whole... Magilla. I'm sorry I interrupted. Go ahead. She's done this before. All right.
So you ready? Find a piece of paper, nothing fancy, or if you've got a journal someplace stowed away that you used to write in, go find that, blow the dust off of it, grab a pen, put yourself someplace cozy, comfortable. This is not, you know, creative writing class in college. You're not here to get an A+. In fact, you're going to play like a child, step outside of good and bad and right and wrong and great at the end. And the big one, perfection, and take a free fall. And what I'd like you to do is open up that fresh blank page, a world of possibility. And I'd like you to close your eyes and tune in to the most charged theme in your life right now, the most charged theme in your life. So, prototype, I'm going through empty nest right now, and I never thought it would rock my world the way that it has. So maybe it's empty nest. Maybe you're going through a divorce. Maybe it's career change. Maybe it's self-care. So it doesn't have to be negatively charged. It can be positively charged, but you know what that is, that thing that keeps you up at night, that thing you promise you won't bring up at the Thanksgiving dinner table and you do anyway. That's your theme. Write it at the top of the page. Now, honor yourself by grabbing your phone or any kind of timing device, because instead of letting our minds just go, because I bet a lot of you out there have written in journals before and stopped for the very reason that we start to swirl in the vortex of woe. We tell each other the same story over and over and over again, and we get sick of it. So what I'd like for you to do is set your timer for 3 minutes and ask yourself, what do I really want to say about this charged theme in my life? And set the timer for 3 minutes and go and start with what I really want to say. And then just let your mind go wherever it needs to go for 3 minutes. Just honor wherever it needs to go. Then when the timer goes off, lift up your pen, especially if you're in the middle of a sentence. Just lift it up, liberate the pen and the thought. Mm. And then ask yourself this powerful question. Does this thought pattern serve me? Does this thought pattern serve me? And if the answer is yes, then set your timer for another 3 minutes and keep going. Just keep riffing. If the answer is no, then go back to what I really want to say and write for another 3 minutes. And I'd like you to do this for 9 different increments of 3 minutes, not forcing it, not trying to get anywhere with it. But what I want you to do is to tune in to your thought patterns. And the idea is to shift those thought patterns that don't serve you so that you can move forward in your life. And you won't move forward if you're not aware of those thought patterns and how they serve us and sabotage us.
Wow. Nice. Interactive radio here on WBAI. We're getting the audience to participate. Thank you for that. 9 times. What happens between number 3 and 4, or 7 and 8? I'm kidding, but something must happen.
Well, you know, it's not prescriptive.
Okay.
So it's really for you. It's your personal and authentic experience. However, I do this all the time, by the way. I always have 3 different journals that have 3 different themes, and then I do this, and this is how I journal these days. So it's intentional journal writing. And I teach it. I actually am going to launch an online class for those who can't make it out to Montana, and I teach this in it. But I think that at first you go in with kind of the old story, and then you become more nimble as you stretch your consciousness and as you start to become aware of that serving and that sabotaging.
Right. And 27 minutes, it's not the end of the world. It's not a full-length movie.
Or novel,
or reading a novel. This is great. I mean, how many people know what's going on with you? I mean, I'm just thinking immediately, this would be great if you have a family that's in crisis, and you just give them each a piece of paper. Does anybody know what's going on? What's the major theme in your life right now? Do you know what the major theme in your sister's life, your father's life, your mother's life, your partner's
life? How about even your own life? I mean, sometimes I don't think we realize what's really troubling us. Like, we haven't sort of sat down and said, well, it really is this thing. I keep putting it on X, but it really is Z that's the real charge for me. And maybe if I work this out, Y will feel better.
That's why I was asking, do you find people at first don't really know what's really going on with me? I don't know what my major theme or one major theme is, and that they find that after they've started the first 3 minutes.
Well, on the five-day retreat, when I can really dig in with people, on the first day, I have them write down for their eyes only the three most charged themes in their life. And then we find, through doing different intensive writing exercises, we find different entry points into those themes. For this exercise, you know, I don't have people share this. I don't do this at my retreats. This is just something I give to people who feel stuck. But the number one thing that they'll say is, what do you mean by serve? And I think that's an interesting question, isn't it? That people don't know what it is to serve themselves.
Or whether a thought is serving them or not.
Right.
And I don't want to give it up. You know, I mean, a lot of times, okay, I am not willing, you know, this is bothering me, but I'm not willing to let it go. I want it to keep bothering me because I'm working on it and it's working on me and I'm going to get to somewhere with this. So don't tell me to let it go, which I'm sure you don't do.
Or, that's my story. Don't take my story away from me. I'm a victim. I'm happy to be a victim. That's my currency. That's my identity. Don't tell me there's another way. People, I see that a lot. In fact, when I went out with that book, because it was a New York Times bestselling book, and then it was published in 9 different countries, it was a fascinating field study in humanity and human consciousness. But it was so interesting to hear how many people did not want that news, that they could tell themselves a different story, that they could tune into the workings of their mind and find emotional liberation, especially when they were being what society would call them victimized.
So when you wrote the memoir, This Is Not the Story You Think It Is, A Season of Unlikely Happiness, did it come out differently than you thought when you started it?
Well, I wrote my way through a 6-month marital crisis. So I lived my way through that book using writing. So I had no idea what the end was. Mm-hmm. And I never thought it would get published. I write fiction. Fiction is my love. I like to make stuff up. And that's why I couldn't be more thrilled to be coming out with Willis Grove, because it's inspired by a lot of what we're talking about. And namely, my writing retreats in Montana. I've gotten to work with 1,000 people from all over the world.
Yeah.
And to see the collective humanity, the pain that we're in, the love that we crave, our longing, our delight, it all comes out so beautifully and purely when we leave home and we gather together with kindred seekers in a place far from home.
And I want to tell people that they can meet Laura Munson tonight at Lingua Franca, down on Bleecker Street, 382 Bleecker Street.
It's between Perry and Charles.
Perry and Charles. From 6 to 7:30, you'll be signing books. You're in conversation with Priscilla
Gilman. Who's an author.
Who is an author.
Wonderful woman.
We're inviting people to meet you tonight, Laura Munson, at 382 Bleecker Street between Perry
and Charles.
And Charles, from 6 to 7:30. And we want to offer your new book that actually is coming out today. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Our WBA audience is right on top of things. They get books the day they're released. Willa's Grove, 4 women, 1 week. and One Question. Do you have one question? I'm curious about that title, the One Question part. But you can get Laura Munson's book by contributing to this station, by becoming a WBAI buddy. You get the book for free if you become a WBAI buddy. At the $10 level, you can call us at 212-757-5555. The secrets of life are in this book. You're getting the secrets of life. Everything you need to know to help yourself heal and feel better in life are inside this book. And her other works. Am I overselling? Yeah. $10 for a contribution, and we're offering also visit to come to two of our workshops, because we've been promoting 12 workshops here at the Positive Mind Center for these fund drives at the $240, $20 a month level. If you want to contribute to that level, we're welcoming that. But if not, we're going to let you come to two of the workshops here at the Positive Mind Center, plus you get Laura Munson's book, and you can meet Laura tonight at 382 Bleecker, Lingua Franca, from 6 to 7:30. Let's talk more about the book. What's the one question?
It's a question that we all have asked many times in our life, and a question that we will continue to ask in our life, and that is, so now what?
So now what?
Maybe life didn't go as we had planned. Or maybe it did, and we have no idea how to navigate our next steps. And it's inspired by what I hear at Haven Writing Retreats over and over and over again. Because often when we're in those crossroads moments, that's what makes us want to write. That's what makes us want to go deeply inside of ourselves to find the answers. And yet, I think people isolate when they're in those crossroads, so now what moments. Mm. They isolate, they become islands, and I'm calling for people to gather together in safe, intimate circles to express themselves and have those conversations that we all need to be having.
Because it's kind of like I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Laura, it seems to me like it feels like a wall when you get to that so now what. First of all, it's embarrassing. Right? I mean, I'm thinking of one, like, you could train a lifetime to become a certain type of professional. Then you get into the profession and you realize, I don't really like this. This is what I spent my years doing, and now I'm doing it. I don't really like it. So now what? Now what do I do? And I would think the first or one of the things that you would confront immediately is like, I don't want to share this with people. I don't want to tell them what a fool I've been. Or, you know, I don't want to talk about it. Maybe I'll figure it out by myself in the next 6 months and then come to a decision about it. So I'm wondering, is that what you run into people? And to me, it's like a wall, an internal wall. Like the isolation you talk about seems to me make a lot of sense, because this could be a first time in somebody's life where they're saying, so now what? And it's dark in there. Can you talk about this?
Well, yes, and it's often because of things that we chose, right? So it's not just like some grand surprise in our life. These crossroads moments usually come out of things that we signed up for, like you're saying, a career. You know, if you've got letters after your name, many years devoted to the study of that career and then becoming an expert in it. Or let's say you sign up for a relationship, and that relationship is not serving you or either of you. So now you're looking at ending the relationship. Or let's say empty nest. You know, you have kids because you want them to fledge. You don't want them living in your basement. And yet that can have you on your knees, too. So
what did we do wrong?
Right. And so then suddenly we're in shame. We don't know how to talk about it, which is why that writing prompt I gave earlier can be so helpful to help you navigate that time and create those shifts. Writing should be up there with diet and exercise in the realm of preventative wellness.
Say that again.
Writing should be up there with diet and exercise in the realm of preventative wellness.
What about doing it alone, though? I mean, that's all. I agree with that, first of all. I think, you know, but you have to get used to, because it's a lonely thing. It can be. So how do you bridge connection to other people through writing. Is that one of the next steps? Because organically it would seem, hey, I'm getting good at this. I know my voice now. I know how to do this exercise. But I want to share it. I want to go. Somehow people, needing people, has occurred. And does that happen? And what is that like for people?
Well, one of my favorite authors, Terry Tempest Williams, says, I write in a solitude born of community. And I love that because so much of our life is spent in solitude, but it's mined by our experience of the collective.
Yeah.
And that's why I tell people, keep your journals someplace very close to your bed or under your bed. Mm-hmm. If you've got mm-hmm. judgy people in your life and eyeball rolling teenagers, don't put it anywhere where they can see it. But this is a very sacred place for you to feel safe and to parse your big questions. But then to me, you can bridge to yourself in your writing so that you can more powerfully and authentically bridge to the people in your lives, whether they're in your family, whether they're friends, whether they're coworkers. This is about getting in touch with your intuition. So I tell people, writing is writing. It's moving words around on the page. But the truth is that writing is living in a certain way that helps you find what it is that you have to say. So writing can be taking an intentional walk. I have a friend who walks around New York City, and with each step, she says or she thinks, it's a walking meditation, love, joy, calm, ease. She just walks around New York City. Love, joy, calm, ease. It's love, joy, safe, ease. Love, joy, safe, ease. I did that all around the village in Soho the other day, and it was perfectly delightful.
Because I walk around New York and go, oh, there's Radio City Music Hall.
Yeah, yeah. I just did that, actually.
There's the Rockefeller Center. Love, joy,
safe, ease.
Oh, I really invite the listeners to do that. I think that's a beautiful walking meditation, a way to sort of shift your mind to something different. I also feel like writing, for me personally, it always comes out at these transitional points. It's when I really need to be heard, but maybe not by anybody but myself right now. And it's an opportunity to sort of externalize, you know, what's going on in my head and maybe start to form what's going on in my head. And I also sort of encourage my clients a lot to do that, because especially with, you know, traumatic victim stories, it's really important to start to get it outside of your body, to be able to see it a little bit. And you never know if you share it or not, but there's so much in just sharing it with yourself on some level.
Oh, yeah. When we get it outside of our bodies, then we can look at it and see what it is and reflect back to ourselves what we thought was our story. And in so many cases, I look at what I've written and think, that's not even true. I was a rebel when I was in high school and college, and it served me well. But I'm not a rebel now.
Right.
But I identify as a rebel.
And I'm still writing as a rebel. And then as I'm writing from a rebel, maybe this other self of me actually really emerges. The real me comes out. And then you look at that and say, that's who I am now. I'm really not the rebel kicking cans around the parking lot at school and puncturing tires or whatever it was rebels did out in Montana.
Speak for yourself.
I'm sorry. So two things are coming to me because, you know, there's a thing called focusing in mental health. Gene Genlin came up with focusing and practice focusing. And it's really about tuning into the center of your body. It's tuning into your torso. What's going on in there, in your heart, in your chest? Do you do something like that? Because focusing, that's where it starts. It strikes me like when I'm writing and doing it right, I'm feeling a warmth in my heart. I'm feeling an opening in my belly. I'm feeling physical changes as I'm getting closer to what it is I need to say. And it's a form of focusing. You're in the zone when you're in that warm place physically. And that's what focusing tries to do, get you into the zone of my feelings so that I can grapple with it and fully know what it's like to feel good in there. But mostly when you talk to people and you stop them and you say, what are you feeling in the middle of your body? mostly people feel, there's something bothering me. You know, I have something irritating. And it's always there. And I need to work it out, but I can't do it now. Have a good day. So do people get into this kind of warm place, this zone, with their writing? Do they report anything about physiological changes going on as they're writing and when they've gotten actually to the end of these 9 3-minute segments or anything like that? Because to me, that's wellness. You're getting to a state of wellness when you're contacting what's really going on inside me.
Well, this may sound sort of lofty, but I think for your listeners, they'll understand this. And to me, it's not about the writing at all. It's about what's behind the words and what's in between them and then what's left in their wake. So it's like we busy the mind by letting all the words come out.
Yep.
But the real work is what's intuitively behind it. That's what you're really trying to contact.
Mm-hmm. And I think the 3-minute segments are great for that. You know, you're not burdening people with 10 minutes, 7 minutes, 3 minutes. I can get to whatever. I can tolerate anything for 3 minutes. You know, and then another 3 minutes. Hey, I actually like that. I want to do another 3 minutes and then another 3 minutes. You know, so I could see how this could be the vehicle, the way for people to feel, okay, this isn't so, you know, I'm actually enjoying this. This is really good. I'm actually getting somewhere with this.
And let's make it fun, too. It doesn't have to be so dark and heavy. There can be levity to this. And so, you know, you hear the phrase, find your voice, thrown around a lot now.
Right.
What does that even mean? To me, it's when there's ease, when there's flow, when you lose track of time, when you feel, you know, like I do this work with the fourth graders.
No?
In the elementary school. Mm. I go in and we don't do this exact thing, but we do different writing prompts.
Right.
And these kids can't wait to do it. They can't wait to get their hands on their pens and their little veins are popping out on their
neck.
First
time you're doing this?
Yeah,
or the second time?
Each time I do it.
Okay.
You know, and they and they don't even want to know the directions. Then they all want to read, like raising their hand, and they do, pick me, pick me.
Mm.
Then I do it with the seventh graders.
Yeah, it's not cool.
Hands go up. I don't get it. Are we getting graded? I'm not a writer. I'm not creative. I'm a jock. Sally's the one who's the creative one. And none of them want to read. And I've worked with many educators from preschool all the way through PhD level educators. And they tell me that that inner critic is born around 12 years of age.
Mm.
And just think, by the time she or he is our age, she knows exactly what to say to break our hearts.
Mm.
So what I try to do at Haven is really invite the playfulness, even if we're writing about difficult and dark material. And the way you know that you're in your flow and in your voice is when you start to lose track of all of that, you know, monkey mind, is, you know,
yeah,
what the Buddhists call it.
Sure.
And I also appreciate something about the containment of this exercise. Like, there's something to containing all of that activation and channeling it into, like, here's 3 minutes, and then asking the question, is this serving me? Like, all this energy going to this?
Yeah.
No.
Right.
Start again. And it's a way of sort of like winnowing down and like getting to like what's the really core thing and containing it. Because we can overwhelm ourselves with exploding onto, you know, 50 sheets of paper, you know, in this big, deep story. And
sure.
Just the monkey mind takes over if you let it. And giving it that time frame and giving it a specific thing to channel to, then it's really going to be more in service of you. And I really appreciate that. And that's really important for people who are feeling overwhelmed and overcharged.
Fascinated that it starts at 12. You know, I think back, I could see a lot of changes happening at 12, 13. A lot of things are changing physically, you know, but I'm fascinated with this idea that the critic actually comes in around that age. And it makes sense that it does in a way. You're differentiating. You're becoming an individual. You're trying to separate from mom and dad. You're trying to create your own identity. You don't want to be a kid anymore, but you're not ready to be an adult. So you need something to keep you in line. The critic can do that, unfortunately. Mm. And so, you know, you want to try to let that go.
Yeah, how about an inner champion?
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound nicer?
Right. Yes. Inner champion. So, yeah. How do you create that? I mean, we are the positive mind, and we want to bring ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. How about an inner champion? First, we have to acknowledge there's two of me. There's me and my critic, and me and myself, me, all the things that I'm not happy with. And that's constantly attacking this other self, this part of me. How do I convert that critic into an inner champion? We're going to get back to this after our musical break. Yeah, we have to take this musical break, but we do want to remind people that you can meet Laura Munson tonight at Lingua Franca, 382 Bleecker Street. And by becoming a BAI buddy, you will get a signed copy of the book for $10 a month. Call us at 212-757-5555. You get the book, and we're going to talk about this book after we come back. 212-757-5555.
Take all of your wasted honor, every little past frustration. Take all of your so-called problems, better put them in quotation. Say what you need to say.
You're listening to The Positive Mind. John Mayer, perfect for our guest today, Sarah.
Say what you need to say.
Say what you need to say. Is that what it comes down to, saying what you need to say?
Or what you want to say, or what you have to say, or what you long to say, right?
It has to do with
what you aren't saying, really, and not necessarily to others, but how about to yourself?
Mm-hmm. And more than those inner critic words that we're saying to ourselves. Because people get wrapped up in that vortex of the negative self-talk. And, you know, I really believe that writing, and your writing particularly, can get us out of that. Mm. But you wanted to say something about the inner critic being a hurt boy or girl or...
Well, several things. First of all, most of us wouldn't speak to our worst enemies the way that we speak to ourselves in our own minds.
Mm.
And I was not aware of this for a long time. In fact, I thought that I needed to have that inner critic voice to keep me in line. It was just sort of how I was raised. And so it was during that time depicted in my memoir, This Is Not the Story You Think It Is, that that book was really an exercise in me learning how to tune into my mind and what the climate of my mind was, and it was not kind. It was brutal.
Right.
And once I started to realize that, I think the first step was to kind of say, put your dukes up, you know, like, how dare you talk to me that way?
Mm-hmm.
And so I gave her a name, and I called her my evil twin sister, Sheila, and I don't know where I got that. And the book was a bestseller in Australia, and that's like their Jane, you know, so I felt bad a lot. But I needed to do that at that point. Then, you know, I was promoting that book for about 6 years because it was published all over the place, and I realized that that no longer served me. To have this put up your dukes attitude with my inner critic, like get thee out, like exorcise her.
Yep.
Because even though she was a result of different people and institutions in my life, I still invite her in. I still give her better thread count than I give my own self. And I realized that doesn't work. So then I decided she's just a scared child who knows just what to say to break my heart. And I'm going to put her down for a nap. I don't think I'm ever going to shake her, you know. Maybe I will, but she's different than your conscience saying don't jump off a cliff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But so I've become playful with her now, and I call her the inner critter. And so I have a much more kind relationship with what goes on in my mind.
So I sometimes feel like the inner critic or that inner child is most afraid of growing. And I think these crossroads moments and this inner wall that you were talking about comes at that point of it's time to grow. It's time to split your skin. It's time to another step, another growth to being more grown up. And I believe that that little inner child is terrified of becoming an adult.
Well, it's like leaving mom and dad. I don't want to leave mom and dad. So the critic is often the voice of your, like, how would your parents be pleased by the negative voice in your head? They would love it. I mean, if it's keeping you in line the way they wanted you to stay in line, then they would applaud and say, you're succeeding, you're great, just the way you are. Don't change, Laura. You know, so if you identify, you can. I bet everybody, if they look at the critic, can find the voice of somebody in their childhood that they knew that got in there and made them act properly as a child, and they're still doing it with this critical voice. So writing can be the way to say goodbye to that voice, to identifying, recognizing it. But it's a long goodbye, isn't it?
Well, I just sort of think of her being a scared child, and I just sort of love her into submission, you know. It's like, I am a mother, and so if my children were coming in the middle of the night with a night terror and they were freaking out and yelling and throwing things around, I'm not going to say, beat it, get out of here, go back to sleep. I'd say, come to mama, let me hold you, let's go back to your room, I'll rub your back, sing you a lullaby, and guess what, they quiet down, they go back to sleep. That's how I treat my inner critic, just as a scared child.
You've learned a lot.
I'm not always good at it.
Mondays are particularly hard. My critic is very strong on a Monday. So I would like you to read your letter to the reader in this book, Willa's Grove. Four women, one week, one question. 1 week, one question. And the question was for our audience, so now what? So now what do I do? You know, there's this other thing in counseling called narrative therapy, where you externalize the problem. So writing can be a way to externalize it, at least to even identify and name the problem. There's a whole branch of psychotherapy called narrative therapy. It strikes me that this is like, without paying for a therapist, is a way to do this. These workshops can be a way to get into your story, find your theme, and then ultimately share it. So let's hear a little bit from your book, and then we'll talk about what the whole book is about.
Yeah, well, I'd like to set it up by saying that when I went out with the last book, I kept hearing from people at these big, huge women's conferences where I was speaking, you wrote your way through a a difficult time. I'm going through a difficult time, but, and then all the refusals would come. Who do I think I am? It's self-indulgent at best. I was raised with seen but not heard.
Yeah.
Don't show off. Mm. I don't have a voice. And I realized there is a hole in our society around self-expression, and I want to fill it with gatherings. And that's when Haven was born. And so I thought, I want to write a book that shows people coming together in this model that's not a typical, you know, group of friends that go somewhere for a weekend. This is a friend who is in a crossroads moment, who has another friend who also is, both of them isolating. So one asks her friend, she asks another, and that third one asks a fourth. So it's a new community, and I'm mm-hmm. calling it a bridge.
And men can do this as well.
Of course, yes. This book happens to be about four women. I want to read you the invitation.
Please.
It's very short, but I want this book to start a movement. I want people mm-hmm. to be doing this all around the world. Yeah. And this, it's not formulaic. It happens very organically in the pages of this book, but it can be used for a model for how to put together your own Grove Week or your own.
I do want to say that you have a nonprofit organization that is promoting this Haven workshop. Is that correct? Or these exercises?
Haven Writing Retreats is for profit, but Haven Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit.
Right.
And I'm really proud of that because we're able to support people and bring in a really diverse demographic, which I love. And it makes it much better for the people on the retreat, too, because there are people from all over the world in every demographic.
Right.
So this is the invitation. Here we go. You are invited to the rest of your life. You know you can't go on like this, not for one more day. You need an interlude. Imagine this. You are in a farmhouse in Montana, wrapped in a soft blanket, sitting by a warm wood stove. There's a cup of tea in your hand, just the way you like it. There are women surrounding you who need this just as badly as you do. We all have the same question. The question is, so now what? Come to Montana and find out. Love, Willa. You don't have to do this alone. And then I'd like to read just two paragraphs from the end of the book. This is a letter to the reader that really calls the reader to action. So the book truly is a novel and reads like a novel. But if you long for this sort of connection, then read this letter to the reader and get inspired. Like I said, I want to start a movement. So this is a quote from the book. One of the characters says this. You know, we're all fluent in this language, in the language of community, and yet we so rarely speak it. It really is our mother tongue. And here's the first two paragraphs. Dear reader, I have learned something that might just be the most important lesson of my life, and I would like to share it with you. There is a language that we crave, a language of the heart that grows from our worry and our wonder and our stories, rooted in our experience of this beautiful and heartbreaking thing called life. Too many of us have trained ourselves out of speaking that language. We were all fluent in it when we were children. But somewhere along the way, we were taught or conditioned to forget it, to not be honest when we are asked, how are you? And to not really listen to the answer when we ask others the same question. So many of us have lost our authentic voices and reduced our conversations to grocery store talk and texts with an emoji at the end. The truth is, we long to be seen and heard and accepted, especially when we are in pain. Yet out of fear of judgment or rejection, we too often draw in and become islands rather than bridging to our family and friends. I know this because at times I've made that choice, and the fallout from that led me to devote a major piece of my life to bringing people together in safe, intimate circles of self-expression, which led me to write this book.
Could you read the first two about communities again?
You know, we're all fluent in this language, in the language of community, and yet we so rarely speak it. It really is our mother tongue.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
Community-sponsored radio here on WBAI, bringing Laura Munson all the way from Montana to Bleecker Street 382 Bleecker Street. You can meet her tonight and get her book if you become a WBAI buddy, Community Sponsored Radio. Join us here at the Positive Mind Center for a couple of workshops. For $10 a month, you can become a WBAI buddy and meet Laura Munson tonight at 382 Bleecker Street, Lingua Franca, from 6 to 7:30, 212-757-5555. 212-757-5555. Did you discover community after going through a period of isolation? Because writing is an isolating activity. And where does community figure into that? I mean, you want people, community. I know that we're all connected. We should be. We are social animals. But talk about this transition from this isolated individual writing to understanding the wisdom of community.
Well, even though this is a novel, it grew out of, yes, what I see happen every single time on my Haven writing retreats. They say, we're your best group ever, right? Like, it could never be this good again. And it just always is, because it attracts incredible human beings. But that said, I also went through a time of great loss. I lost our family of four to divorce, and my life changed greatly. And I drew in and kind of nose to the ground and wrote and wrote and wrote. And then I started Haven, and it opened me up. I started to believe in community. I live in a small town in Montana, so everyone knows everybody's business. It's a wonderful town. But I think we all isolate, you know, when we're going through it. Many of us do. And I did. And I realized that it was not serving me. And so while watching what happened on these retreats for these people, one woman said, "This is the best family reunion I've never been on." Just cracked me up. So I decided to, you know, write this book and live with these women to help me bridge to community. Mm-hmm. You know, and so leading Haven doesn't mean that I'm in that community. I lead the community.
Yeah.
But living with these women on the page has inspired me to be much more present in my own community.
And again, it becomes like the family reunion that never was, because people are sharing. So next, now what? People are really sharing from a place of showing who they are. And that's what the dream of a family reunion is all about, is where people get to speak who they are that we often don't even know about. Yeah. How can they come to a Haven retreat?
Well, they go to lauramunson.com. I just relaunched my website last week, and it gives a really comprehensive description of all the different programs. There are five different programs now.
Okay.
It's in its eighth year. And so you can go through and see if it feels like a fit for you. I tell everybody, Haven meets you where you need to be met. So I've worked with best-selling authors, and I've worked with people who have no interest in getting published at all. It's really about authentic, empowered self-expression. And so they can, there's a section on the website that says to set up an intro call with Laura, and then we get on the phone and we talk about your creative journey, and we talk about how Haven could be a match for you.
Do you teach other, like, how can we bring it to Brooklyn? You're going to be in Montana, but can I learn, or are you training other writers on how to lead these workshops, and how can we get it down in Florida and in New York and other places, because you're only one person?
That is true, but I bring 120 people a year into Montana to do these programs.
Wow.
Many of them are New Yorkers.
Right.
And him, New York.
Maybe not.
Have you been there?
Yes. I was there at the very beginning.
You did the first year,
I believe. Yeah.
It's much different now.
Fantastic experience. It was really, truly amazing. And I was at a bit of a crossroads myself. Something that I really appreciated about, you know, when I first talked to Laura about the retreat, it was like, yeah, the isolation of the writer, the self-destruction of the writer. Very often writers can be very self-destructive people, and to bring more of a holistic approach and a spiritual approach and a self-discovery approach that really said, you know, be vulnerable and you'll be supported and you'll be connected with. And that's also what I feel about, you know, in reading this book, it's such an invitation. And I feel like I've been so enjoying it, because I feel like I'm in Montana with these women and just really appreciating their authenticity.
authenticity and their voices. And like, it's a little primer of like, oh, well, this is how it really would be if I did say what I really wanted to say.
And I remember you coming back from that retreat, actually, 7 years ago.
Eight years ago.
And yeah. I thought it was the bonding with the women that was the most transformative.
Yeah.
That was my sense of you. I know you did. It was a sense of community that you really felt. And didn't you stay connected through the internet?
We're still connected on Facebook. A few of the women were
participants.
We're still connected. And it was such an intimate space. I mean, I remember coming to some of my most intimate organizations around very painful parts of my life. So I think it's deeply important. You know, again, it's like so accessible. I mean, writing amongst all other things. You'd mentioned this before. If you can speak and read, you can write. It's accessible. A piece of paper and a pen is very inexpensive, and you can just do it anywhere, in any way.
What about people who's like, I can't write because I'm not going to get published? You know, I don't want, you know, what's the point if I'm not going to get published? You know, do you get that block as well? I guess if they're going to a Haven retreat, they're not really, they've already realized I'm going to be go writing. But I often find people, you know, resist the idea of writing, even anything personal, because it's not going to get me anywhere. It's not going to get me published. And that's a archaic, terrible, terrible critic.
Well, it's a critic.
It's a critic in there, right? Mom and Dad said, unless you make money from it, unless it's going to help you survive, what's the point? Right. Can you say something about that? Do you run into that issue?
Well, it's simply a tool for self-expression. And that's why I promise people that Haven meets you where you need to be met. I can't say enough because, okay, so let's say you're somebody who really wants to write the, you know, great American novel, and they want to work with me because I'm a best-selling author and I've got all kinds of industry connections, and I walk the walk and I've lived at that intersection of heart and mind and craft that is the writing life for almost four decades now. And, you know, really committed for the last three decades. Still, you can turn a phrase or twist a plot or have a fabulous command of the English language all day long, but if you don't have your finger on the pulse of what's behind those words, you will never build that bridge to the reader. Or if you're giving a speech, if it's the spoken word, you'll never make that bridge to the audience if you haven't made that bridge to yourself. And especially if you can turn a phrase and twist a plot and have a fabulous command of the English language, the reader or the person in the audience will be frustrated. They won't connect with you and they won't know why. And that's what I'm trying to help people get in touch with, their intuition, what's behind what it is that they have to say. And you can use this for work. You can use this for interpersonal relationships. It's simply a tool. And so that's why what I love about the retreats is that you have some people who are very, very committed to finishing a book. We've had well-known household name best-selling authors and many people who have no interest in getting published and everything in between. A lot of people who've given everything to their careers and they're getting sick of being a voice for an advertising agency.
Or a publishing house.
Yeah, and they, lots of marketing people, and now they finally want to get into their flow. And I tell people, you know, that I'm trying to change the tortured artist paradigm that Nisima was touching on. I want to bring us into empowered self-expressors.
Right.
We don't, this isn't about being artists. This is about the conversation that you have with your boss or your partner or your mother. This is authentic self-expression in the way that only you can say it. What is unique and surprising and essential about what it is that you have to say?
LauraMunson.com, LauraMunson.com, to hear more about how to connect to yourself and connect to other people and community, creating community through writing together and sharing writing.
And how to follow this invitation to connect with
yourself, first.
And with others.
So I like the question, so what's next?
Yeah. So what now?
So what now? Yes, you know.
So now what?
But you can ask it a million different ways. What's next?
Right, you can. We only have a minute or two left. I want to remind people you can meet Laura Munson tonight at Lingua Franca, 382 Bleecker Street. And for a $10 contribution, a month to this station, become a WBAI buddy. You can get the book for free tonight. It's called Willis Grove for Women, 1 week and one question. I don't know. I'd like to follow that up with four men, 1 week and one question.
Absolutely.
I'm sure our question might be different, but it doesn't matter. Just getting yourself writing is the key. And to meet a best-selling author who we thank so much for being here on The Positive Mind.
I've loved being here. Thanks, Kevin.
Writing,
thanks, Nassim.
Writing is a positive thing to do. Call us at 212-757-5555 to get your copy. Become a WBAI buddy and come to two workshops here at the Positive Mind Center. Thanks again. See you next week, folks.
Thank you.
I'm Sophia Albaty, Vice Chair and member of WBAI's Local Station Board. The WBAI Local Station Board is the Pacifica Foundation Board responsible for local management and operations here at WBAI. The next meeting of the Local Station Board will be Wednesday, March 11th at 7 p.m. at the YWCA, 30 3rd Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, between Atlantic Avenue and State Street. Under the current bylaws, the Local Station Board has oversight over WBAI's programming. One of the actions the Local Station Board will consider at the March meeting is a resolution to establish a new LSB Program Director Search Committee. Meetings of the Local Station Board are open to the public, and as always, there will be an opportunity for public comment. The meeting is wheelchair accessible. Again, that's Wednesday, March 11th at 7 p.m. at the YWCA, 33rd Avenue, Brooklyn, New York. Listeners and the public are invited and welcome.
Hey, this is Chaka Khan, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
This is the time for reason. Be proud as any man. You're ancient as the land you roam. Keep worshiping the sun. And no one has a hold on you.
The Pacifica Bylaws referendum is underway. February 18th is the start of the balloting phase, and all valid members will receive an e-ballot, paper ballot, or postcard with unique voter ID and PIN to cast your vote in favor of or against the proposed bylaws. For more information or to contact the election supervisor, visit elections.pacifica.org or leave a voicemail on 510-931-7504. All ballots must be received by March 19, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in order to be counted. The proposed bylaws will reduce the size of the Pacifica National Board from 23 to 11. Proponents state that there are too many cooks in the kitchen, creating chaos. Opponents state that smaller boards means fewer voices and less representation.
Listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. Stay tuned.